Welcome back, everyone. This is Simon Flitz, and this is The Change Show. We are recording. We're here. I'm on one side of the Atlantic, and on the other side is my special guest this week, Cheryl Plouffe, who is on holiday as well. I mean, it's fantastic, isn't it? Well, I've interrupted your holiday. I do apologize, Cheryl. How are you this morning?
I am great, Simon. Do not apologize. This actually was unplanned, which I guess is the beautiful thing about entrepreneurship, right? Is that as long as you can carry your computer somewhere and you have Wi-Fi access, you can pretty much work from anywhere. So decided to come up to the cottage in Midwestern Ontario for the week. And that's where I'm situated right now. It's raining outside. So if you hear some noise in the background, that would be thunder.
Well, we haven't had any thunder today here in West Wales, but it has it certainly rained a fair few buckets today. So Cheryl, it's an absolute pleasure to meet you. Our mutual good friend Chris Ceballero introduced us, didn't he? So Chris, obviously the person who runs the KLDR radio here online, and yeah, I mean, I'm just excited to be chatting to you and hear all about what you do and how you're supporting people out there through this medium of podcasting, which, I mean, is an absolute phenomenon at the moment in terms of just how many podcasts are starting and how, you know, what you're doing with your clients, as I'm sure you'll share later, is helping them differentiate themselves and get out there and, you know, and grow their businesses through their podcasting. So it'd be great to hear some thoughts on how you're helping them do that. But for the audience at home, do you want to just tell us a little bit about Cheryl Plouffe? What's your origin story?
Sure, Simon. So I am a broadcaster by profession. I spent over 25 years cumulatively in that, you know, in that industry. And 17 of those years were spent on the national stage as a broadcaster. And so I served in a lot of different roles, namely as an on-air presenter, as an anchor, and as a reporter. But I also managed the news department at one of the 50 best managed brands in Canada for over 3 years. So I had a team of 17 people across Canada, bureaus and reporters and photographers. And I was in charge of the editorial direction of that news organization, news and information organization. And so it was a great experience. And then I also, as I went up into leadership positions, obviously learned a lot about media and the industry and how interdepartmentally everything worked. And I think prior to that, I wasn't as aware of how things operated kind of at the corporate level. So I learned a lot through that experience. And what I feel I've done now is taken the best practices of the broadcasting industry into what I do. And it helps, it really permeates what I think and how I view media, especially as it pertains to entrepreneurship and small business growth. And that's really what I do now is take the best practices of that and then marry that with what do we need to do as small business owners, as entrepreneurs, whether coach, consultant, people who are in the learning and knowledge industry. How do we take our professional knowledge and wisdom and package that up so we can, you know, put that out there? That's really what I predominantly focus on now.
Brilliant. And what attracted you to the media in the first place?
I started hosting a news magazine program when I was 18 years old. I was tapped on the shoulder because I was a volunteer. I was a behind the scenes volunteer at a cable station in the city that I lived in. And at the age of 18, they needed a host for this news magazine program that they had, like a cable show. And they tapped me on the shoulder and said, "Would you like to try it?" Of course, I'd never been in front of the camera. I had done a little bit of modeling. I'd been in a few fashion shows, parents who were artisans and making scarves and just little fashion shows, you know. So I had done a little bit of that. But aside from that, I really had never done anything in front of the camera. So I started to do it. I was terrified. I didn't know what was going on. And I learned on the job. I learned on the job and I hosted that show for, I think, around 2 years. And then I ended up taking a bit of a break from it because where I lived, we did not have any post-secondary or university or college programs around broadcasting. Wow. So I ended up working working in hospitality and then trying to also make my way up the ranks or work my way through, you know, through volunteerism or through, you know, part-time work in television until I got to the grand stage, I suppose.
So quite often we find that people end up working in areas that are similar or have similar values, if you like, as some of their heroes when they were growing up. Did you have any particular people you looked up to when you were young that were in this space?
I think like any teenager, I was probably obsessed with Entertainment Tonight. And at that time, Mary Hart was the host. And so I, you know, looked up to, that was big 80s hair and all of that. Probably Mary Hart, you know, people like that. I've always, you know, Barbara Walters, who didn't enjoy her interviewing even at that age. So I suppose there were some female broadcasters who I admired and who I looked up to. Yeah. Joan London, I think, was another one at that time who was big. And so, yeah, a few of them come to mind. But I guess I never really thought of myself ever being able to reach that or to do the things that, because when we would see people on television, it seemed so unattainable. And at that time, in many cases, it was, because you had to go through gatekeepers. You know, you weren't, today, we can pick up our phones and we can broadcast anything we want. It's a very different environment. But back then, you know, you had to go through the gatekeepers and you had to, you know, audition and hope that you got one of a very, very few coveted jobs in the industry. And that was the challenge. But now everything's been democratized and we have access to broadcast anything we want, anytime we want. So it's a very different environment.
Yeah, definitely. So move forward a few years then. I'm thinking it must have been a significant change for you to consider going out on your own. Becoming an entrepreneur. So what was going on for you at that time? How did that feel? How did you navigate those waters?
Well, I think the digital landscape was changing radically at the time when I was managing that news department, which would have been from the year 2010 to 2013. That was the period of where I was really rising into leadership and, you know, rising up the ranks, I guess. Yeah. But that was also at a time where things were changing radically in social media and in that landscape, the digital landscape, and even in the broadcasting industry in many ways was going through a lot of changes behind the scenes because of the changes that was, you know, implying as far as advertising. You know, if we think about what the model of broadcasting is in terms of how does it monetize? Well, you create content and then you build an audience and then you advertise against that audience. It's actually not that different than what we do as entrepreneurs and as business owners today. We are charged, and my belief is that we have to think of ourselves as mini media companies, yeah, in that we are charged to create content and build an audience. And I think there are other ways besides audience building, and we'll get to that later, to be able to, you know, pull in, say, advertising. But I think it's really the next level of that would be about connections and relationships. And that's what I predominantly focus on now. But there are some similarities. So back in 2013 was when one day I was unceremoniously told that my job was being eliminated.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. On a Friday afternoon, my boss comes into my office and says, let's go and have a chat in the boardroom. I'm like, why don't we just chat here in my office like we always do?
Yeah.
And come to learn that the job that I was doing, that I was working at, Simon, 24/7. I mean, I was connected to my phone all the time. And they told me that the job was being eliminated because of the changes that the company was undergoing. And they were reevaluating, you know, their role in terms of producing news and information and going more toward a different model.
Mm.
So I guess I was confused because at that point, well, I was bitter, A, upset, B, and it took some time to get over that because it was a realization that probably this was not going to be going in the direction that I had hoped it would in the long term.
Yeah.
But aside from that, it made me realize that, gee, I'm putting my heart and soul and 24/7 into this, and it can just be ripped away from you in the course of a 15-minute conversation.
Mm.
So that was a big realization for me. Plus, I was seeing what was resulting, why that change came about was because of what was happening in digital.
Yeah.
So I started really listening to my heart, and my heart was telling me that maybe this is a sign that you should start paying more attention to what's happening with digital. Do you want to maybe start moving in the direction of starting your own thing eventually? That took 4 years, Simon. It was four years from that moment It took 4 years for me to learn enough and feel confident enough to leave that position to start my own thing. So I didn't start my company until 2017.
Okay. So what was going on in the interim period then? Was it just learning and trying to decide what you were going to do next, really? Or was it, or were you clear on the path you wanted to take?
I was really getting into personal development at that point. And I was spending, part of the reason why I was starting to think more about entrepreneurship was because partly I was traveling and commuting so far distance to get to work. So that wasn't helping the situation. You know, when you feel like, writing might be on the wall, or I'm maybe want to a change in my life or transition, plus you're driving 2 hours a day to a job that you're now starting to feel a little bit bitter toward.
Yeah.
It's not a good combination. So I started really diving deep into personal development, listening to a lot of podcasts, positivity, changing a lot of my habits. So rather than driving to work and hearing cyclical, repetitive, negative 24/7, you know, news that wasn't really going to enhance my life, I decided to listen to audiobooks and CDs at that time, CDs, right? And so it just changed my habits, listening to more positive affirmations and, you know, learning, frankly, about marketing, traveling to conferences all over North America, spending my own time and money and vacation time away from my family in some cases, right? To be able to go to these conferences and learn what I had to learn, investing in programs to learn what I had to learn and to fortify myself for the eventual transition.
I know that I call it the mobile university. I've spent quite a few years in my car listening to, as you say, all of those. I mean, what was interesting about what happened for you then, and quite a lot of, so I do a reasonable amount of coaching for people who are in career transition, and quite often it's stimulated by an outside event, as in they lose their job, or, you know, something dramatic happens in their family and their circumstances completely change, which sort of compels them in a new direction. That seemed to coincide for you, though, with this sense of, you know, a calling almost, and then there was a strong intuition within you to go in a specific direction. So tell us a little bit more about that journey for you.
I feel like it was just a feeling or an instinct in my heart, in my soul, and in my spirit that was calling me to make this change. Yeah. The problem is that it's really scary. It's a scary change to make when you have been, frankly, indoctrinated into this mentality that you work for someone else. And especially people of, you know, of our generation, entrepreneurship really wasn't on the table so much for us. And so this is very new, especially for people our age, to really think about the possibilities and that you can actually start a business because the internet has made that possible. So it was a scary transition, but I knew in my soul and in my spirit that I was being called by a higher power, frankly, you know, to do something different, that it was time. And as scary as it was, that it was really what was meant to be. And I just felt that internally. And I knew that I would have to face those fears, but it was time to do that.
Yeah. And it's amazing, isn't it, how many resources just appear once you've made a decision. But you have to make the decision first, don't you? And I mean, what are the, a big part of making change happen is recognizing who your key stakeholders are, who are the people around you that can help you and support you and make it happen, or that you need to go out and positively influence, you know, to directly make the change happen. So who are those key people for you?
Well, I think that it's one of those things where you make a decision to go in a specific direction and all of a sudden those people appear. And it seems like out of thin air, seems like out of nowhere, but I wonder if there's something more to that. There were some instrumental coaches that really came along, I think, at the right time. And I learned something from each and every one of them, right? You know, but also the clients that I started serving in the very early stages came along right at the right time. You know, I didn't really, frankly, in those early, especially in the first year, maybe didn't know as much, obviously, as I do now. But here's the thing, Simon. One thing I wanted to point out is from the years 2013 to 2017 to when I actually started my business, I was already doing things underground and quietly because I wasn't really, frankly, allowed to be moonlighting and doing other things, especially as a public figure.
Okay, so
I'm happy to share that now, as many years have passed. But between 2013 and 17, I didn't really know what I was doing, but I was creating these coaching programs and different things that I was learning as I was going. I didn't know what I was doing, but every time I would learn something new, I would try to action it and learn something from it and do it in real life. And in my first clients, I actually got in that period of time before I officially started my business. And that was what gave me the confidence and the proof of concept to be able to feel confident leaving the job and the security and all of that in order to start the business. So I was doing things, again, sometimes we hear from people say, well, I can't because my job or whatever. I had the same situation. I just decided to do it anyway. I decided to find a way and be resourceful of like, well, what could I do even privately, quietly, so that no one needs to really know that I'm rushing home from work and quickly getting on the computer to help a person who has hired me, and not a lot of money. I wasn't charging a fortune at that time, you know, to help people, because I wanted to have the experience and learn from the process. But I was getting people results, and then one thing led to the next.
Yeah, definitely. And it's really a modern phenomenon, isn't it, in terms of the side hustle. And I think there's a lot of employers now starting to recognize that they don't own people outside of the, you know, the specific hours that they're doing one job. And so that culture's really thrived in recent years. But as you say, when we were starting to formulate new ideas, we had to do it in our own time, in the background, and largely undercover.
But Simon, I think that in my industry, it's a bit of a gray area, or at least it was then. I don't know what their policies are now, but it was a gray area, because I was a visible public figure and was hired to represent them on camera, on. So I needed to be, quote unquote, on brand in every respect. What I said, how I dressed, how I did my hair. I had to, we couldn't change our hair drastically without their permission. Right. So it's a different, in that industry, maybe a little bit different, but I'm sure that there are people who are in corporate environments right now who could relate to that. And you're right. I hope that we have had some progress in that area, where corporate entities are not maybe are seeing the light and saying to themselves, yeah, we can't really control what someone does in their side hustle, can we? I mean, that's quite unfair.
Yeah, definitely. Wow. We've covered a lot of ground there. Thank you, Cheryl. We've been talking all about Cheryl's background in the media and the almost unstoppable energy that's behind digitization these days, and the whole digital approach to work, and what that meant in terms of Cheryl's decisions to start her own business and get that off the ground. So we've gone through the transition, Cheryl. So tell us a little bit then about those very early days of launching the business in 2017. What was that like?
Well, I started in February of 2017 was when I officially left to start my business. And in the first few years, you know, leading up to the pandemic, of course, the pandemic transformed so many people's lives, but I'll speak to it from that perspective, is that I was throwing a lot of spaghetti at walls. I was really trying to figure out, what did I want to be known for? I mean, I knew that I was in video marketing, that much I knew, because that was, you know, my bread and butter, so to speak, and my professional experience is what I was leaning on and moving forward with. But how I was going about teaching that, and what terms of specifically the focus, you know, so for the first few years, I was really helping people more with the DIY side of things. So I would have programs and courses, and I would teach people and help people to make their own videos. Here's how to make your own video. So I would share with them, you know, how to edit. I'm a self-taught editor myself. So I would teach them from that perspective. As someone who was always in front of the camera, I didn't really know as much about how to edit and what tools. And so I experimented with a lot of things, and I would share that and would say, if you're a person like me who's never edited and has to teach yourself, here's what I did, and it worked. So I really was more focused on the DIY side of things.
Yeah.
Fast forward to the pandemic, and it didn't take long, I would say within a couple of months into the pandemic, once we knew that this was not going to be a two-week deal. Because originally, as we all recall, we all kind of thought, oh, this is going to be a couple of weeks, and then we're going to But then once those 2 weeks passed and then we all realized, oh, this is a long-term thing, that's when everyone's mentality started to shift to, uh-oh, what do we do? And people started moving into panic mode and survival mode. And that's why we saw the surge of people learning how to use Zoom and getting on those cameras for the first time in their lives. And even though they've been scared to do that for 5 years, and now they're forced to do it because getting on camera was a lifeline for themselves, both professionally and personally. So we saw this surge of people that are starting to use these platforms. I had this realization that in and amongst that panic, that entrepreneurs and coaches or small business owners who I had previously been teaching to do the DIY would no longer have the time, patience, or will, frankly, to spend 6 months learning that skill set. They didn't have that time anymore. So that was a bit of a realization for me that I thought, what could I do, or how could I pivot, change in order to serve them better relative to what we're going through right now and the impact this is going to have on us long term. What didn't change was the fact that entrepreneurs, business owners needed video. That's why they were learning and taking courses from me and from others to learn how to make videos. It's not that they wanted to learn to be an editor. They didn't want to necessarily spend time editing. It's they wanted the end result. They wanted the video. And so I thought, what if I changed how I do things from DIY to done for you or done with you? And that's when my business model changed. So through the course of the pandemic and really for the balance of 2020 and even into 2021, those are the thoughts that were going through my head, were how can I change what I'm doing in my industry to more of a done with you, done for you type of model? And that's what I do today. So that's the story of how that came to be, but it was largely because of the pandemic.
Yeah, and when you're changing like that, that itself must bring up a certain level of anxiety, because you've got an established audience, you've got people that want to work with you in a specific way. And now, although from the outside that may sound like a, you know, almost like a just a different segment of the same audience, that's quite a dramatic change you were putting in place there. So what gave you the confidence that you could go out and find a whole new audience?
Well, I think I've always been a speaker. I've always enjoyed getting on programs like yours, right? To be able to speak about topics and ideas and concepts and strategies. And I knew that wasn't going to change. And that has been fundamentally the reason why I've been able to build anything I've been able to build, has been through the course of speaking. And I knew that skill set was still there and I could lean on it. So even though your message can change, what fundamentally doesn't change is that you still need to get out and speak about your ideas and your topic. So for me, it wasn't a question of would I be able to build a new audience. It was a recognition that the existing audience I had was probably not going to be the audience that would take me to the next level. That I knew, because I had built my audience a certain way, or a certain kind of audience to that point, who were more of that level, or of that thinking of like DIY. Whereas what I was going into, which was more done with you, done for you, again, six figure plus and seven figure plus, you know, entrepreneurs and business owners, is a different audience. But I knew, again, going with my heart and instinct as well as my head, but I knew that transition needed to happen, because COVID wasn't going to unchange everything. Everything was changed. So what can you do as an entrepreneur? You have to be cognizant of the changes that are happening and be able to have the will or the courage to be able to make those changes. You know, so had I stayed doing what I did because I was comfortable with it and because I'd already built an audience around that DIY thinking and mentality, I wouldn't have grown myself. And so I think there's something to be said for being cognizant of change and not being afraid of it, but being able to embrace it and say, okay, this is happening. How can I change with it? And that's what I did. It's scary, because you don't know what the future will hold, because your audience isn't maybe the same audience, but you have to pick yourself up and go, okay, well, now I'm building a new audience. So what do? I change my messaging. I change my marketing. I change some things about what I'm saying and how I'm saying it to attract a new audience.
Yeah. And I'm glad you mentioned the whole communication aspect of that, because no point being the world's best kept secret when it comes to entrepreneurialism, is there? Brilliant. So lots of real insights there, I think, for people who are maybe wondering themselves whether they need to pivot and how they're going to go about that. As you say, it is the fundamentals, really, that you just have to get right and really think about it. So tell us then a little bit more about what you do for your clients today. What's this, what the core services that you're working with?
Well, I have two divisions, if you will. One is that I do custom implement, like I create video first content plans and implement those plans for 6 and 7 figure businesses. Mm-hmm. So this is a very, again, more micro agency, you might call it, or, you know, customized private client type work. Obviously, you can only take on so many private clients. And so there's, you know, a limit to the type of clients I would take on in that division of my business. Mm-hmm. But it is more customized and it's really diving into, like, what are we trying to accomplish? So there are a lot of different aspects that go into that. It's not just, oh, let's just make a video. It's looking at what are we trying to accomplish with this? And then following through on the production side of it, that could be in person. I have some clients that I actually go and do videos with in person, or it could be virtual. So whether it be, again, producing a podcast for someone, or it could be recording them on a video conferencing meeting and then taking the content and making videos from that. It could be repurposing would be an example. So it varies. There's lots of customization there. But the other side of what I do is the education branch or division of my company is directed more toward this idea that we call profitable podcasting, which is a way of saying, how do you, the entrepreneur, small business owner, create an all-encompassing organic marketing strategy under the premise of a podcast, video and audio podcast, to help you to get more clients, more referrals, and more speaking engagements for you? We call it profitable podcasting. I mean, really, it's how do you build your own platform? How do you build your own show? How do you, you know, create a system by which you focus and concentrate on relationship building and business connections and networking? Because that's what is the most fruitful thing you can do in your business. It isn't creating these complicated technological funnels that you have no idea what's going on before you have an offer that converts, so that you even know what your conversion rate is. And that's what we see a lot of people do, because they see people say, oh, you need a funnel. You might need a funnel if your business model is aligned to a funnel, or if you have a high converting offer, or if you know predictably what that conversion rate is. Yeah. That's when you need a funnel. But a lot of people start and they put the cart before the horse. So our thinking is helping people to build a platform of their own, a show of their own, in the form of a video audio podcast. And we do it in a very special way.
Okay. So, I mean, what's fascinating about that is that it's back to good old fashioned relationship building, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Back to basics. Isn't that always how it is, though? When things get really complicated and crazy, then you just go, wait a minute, what if I went back to basics? And usually that works.
Yep. So in this incredibly digital world, it's going out there, meeting people, working out how you can support them, how they may be able to work with you, and just generally thinking about good old win-win solutions, as they used to say. So obviously you can't go into loads of details in a simple conversation with me on the how you piece all this together for people, but apart from building relationships, are there any other key headline thoughts you've got for people who are, because I'm sure there will be many people listening who are considering getting their own podcast up and running. So what would you say are some important things to get right up front?
There are several that come to mind, but in the interest of time, I think I'll focus on production.
Yeah.
And production, editing, these are skill sets that most business owners don't have for themselves. And so we subscribe to an editless podcast methodology, right? So that we can get rid of the editing part, which is the part that often is the bottleneck of the entire production model. But I think that it is an examination of the actual production. How does that content, a podcast in this case, how does it actually get produced? It doesn't fall from the sky. So how does it get produced? That's what one of the aspects that we like to dig in with our students is to say, okay, well, here's, you know, here's how we do it. And here's how we are able to get mine this down to a 1 hour per week podcast process. And I think production is one of the big bottlenecks of the situation for most business owners who embark on doing this. The other thing I would say is that the traditional podcast model in some ways is broken, in that usually people who start a podcast, especially today, you know, competing against other podcasts, and there are millions of podcasts out there. In this day and age, I feel like if you're just creating a podcast and hoping that the audience finds you, or hoping that, you know, you're going to get found or discovered, or it's a hope strategy, and that isn't really going to be as fruitful as if you go into it with intent, the intent to build relationships and connections and network through your guests. The key is in the guests, not waiting back for the audience to build, which will build, you know, if you have a good show and you provide a lot of value, your audience will build over time, but it's a long-term strategy. Most business owners are looking for a more immediate ROI. And our feeling is if you focus more on your guests and create a podcast that leverages their audiences and so many other different ways that we teach it, that's where the real business opportunities lie.
Yeah, that makes a whole load of sense. As you say, it's an incredibly busy marketplace out there. But I think there's a lot of really good stuff that people are putting out on podcasts now that previously they didn't have a voice, as you said. You know, they were held back by all the gatekeepers inside the media organizations. And it's really down to people like you that these people are being heard. So, you know, it's fantastic job to be doing. So,
Simon, can I just say one more thing, just as an example? And you mentioned this early on, that Chris Ceballero is the person who connected us.
Yeah.
So if we really think back on that as an example, Chris, I've been on Chris's show multiple times as a video strategist to talk about video. He's been on my show as well. You and I are connected because he introduced us to each other. Now I'm on your show. I would like to have you on my show. Like, you see how it works. It's just, this is really a good example of how this all works, is that now I'm here with you. You're putting this with your audience. I'm going to be sharing this with my audience. And that's how things grow. Just to give a real life example of how and what we're talking about.
Yeah. And Chris is great at that, isn't he? It takes me back. So I wrote a book on networking about 8 years ago, and I interviewed about 50 people who ran global networks. Some were running global networks, some were running regional, some were local networks, but they'd been in the industry and running networks for quite a long time. And again, even then, so LinkedIn was already firmly established, Facebook was firmly established, all of these digital platforms where people could network were absolutely in place. And yet every single one of them emphasized the value of face-to-face, person-to-person, you know, straightforward conversations in a way that made it simple to do business, because you could understand, you could listen to the person and see where the opportunities are. There's no reading between the lines when you're online. And yet if you're in a conversation, you can start to pick up the nuances and get a sense of, that's where I could maybe help.
Yeah, I think social media is going to change a lot. Obviously it has changed already, but it's going to continue to change as we move from web 2 to web 3. And that relationship building, networking, your connections, the people you know, the people you have access to, are going to be even more important in the web 3 world, which is really, it's going to be the foundation of your network is going to be even more important. And I think we're going to be starting to move away from the vanity metrics of social media. And, you know, a person who has a million Instagram followers, okay, good for you, but there are a lot of people who have a lot of Instagram followers or TikTok followers who aren't profitable or making any money.
Yeah.
Or having impact, more importantly.
Well, that's the key.
Some are, by all means, some are absolutely doing well. But I just think that we're going to begin moving away from, you know, that idea of like, I have a million followers, and I would rather have a network and be connected to and have access to smart people like you and have a smaller, more quality-driven group of people who I'm connected to, rather than having a million faceless people that I'm connected to or that follow me.
Yeah, and I think the bit that you said there that really resonated with me was that sense of, you know, who are you trying to support and who are you there and adding value to? If it is, you know, just a massive audience and you're actually not able to connect with any of them, then you're missing the mark completely, aren't you? And it's like, If there is a specific group that you want to support, you've got to find a way of you know, attracting that audience and putting yourself in front of them so they can find you and access all the great stuff that you do.
Yeah, I'm not discounting the fact that these are distribution channels and that having followers is a good thing in the sense of you increase your chances of being found and discovered by virtue of being on those platforms. And it is still obviously a very viable thing that we want to focus on. We certainly do with our podcasting model is we say, distribute your content to all these platforms that have millions of monthly active users. Why wouldn't you do that? But think about it as a distribution channel of your content and really focus more on the relationships that you're building with the guests that you're bringing on your show and that's going to lead you to more introductions and more connection. And that really is the part that you want to focus on.
I just want to thank you, Cheryl, for sharing some incredible insights there. There's a lot that you're saying that's... on one level, it can sound really straightforward, but I know, and I know you know as well, that actually there's a lot of thinking that goes behind this so that you are able to communicate it simply. And I think that's the key message for me that, you know, that I quite like to support people with is the simpler you can make things, the easier it is for people to connect with you and the easier it is for you to communicate that to the world. So, I think you've done a fantastic job there of just keeping it nice and focused and really helping people understand what you're all about. So thanks for that. My very special guest, Cheryl Plouffe. She and I have been talking all about her amazing business. Two parts to it. There's this real top-end strategic stuff, and then there's the how do I get my podcast and grow my podcasting reputation with the other part of the business. And you did mention... how can people find that aspect in particular, the bit that you're supporting people on the podcasting?
If you go to profitablepodcastmethod.com, profitablepodcastmethod.com, you'll be able to find information about it there.
Oh, brilliant. Tell me, is there a specific event in your life that, you know, for you felt like a really significant change? And if so, what helped you get through it?
I think the biggest change for me was in March 2013 when, as I mentioned previously, I thought that I was on a trajectory of growing in a company and moving up the ladder of leadership, and I would be, you know, managing that news department for many, many years to come. And it was just sort of, it just sort of ended one Friday afternoon. Mm-hmm. And I think that was one of those quantum shift type moments in my life, because you are sort of thinking for at that point 13 years I think it was at that point that I'm going to be going in a certain direction, and all of a sudden it changes so radically. That was really the momentous moment, you know, where I was like, well, gee, what do I do now, or where do I want things to go? I think that was the moment for me. I guess second to that would be when I finally did it, you know, when I finally moved from that in 2017 and started my own business. Not really, I mean, I knew some things, but I didn't know definitively. I didn't have all the answers. Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that can be most scary, because when you first start your business, you don't know, actually, even today, no one really ever knows all the answers. And that can be a really scary thing, especially when you are, you know, not clear on certain aspects of how to run a business. You might be really good at a skill set. You might be really good and have professional experience or wisdom or expertise, but you might not know how to run a business, you know? And I'm still learning that, but I've gotten a lot better because I've learned from people who are smarter than me. But I would say those are the two momentous, you know, things that happened in my life professionally. On a personal level though, you know, I am married. just celebrated our 20th anniversary just a few days ago. And so my husband's a really important part of my life and has been instrumental in helping me to forge my way into this profession in the first place. He was a big supporter and a guide. He was my guidance, actually, you know, through that process of getting to that point where I was reaching that level. So that was, you know, prior to my getting that initial national broadcasting job. So he was a big part of that. And then personally, our son was born, you know, in 2008, and that changes your whole life. It changes your perspective on everything. You hear that all the time because it's true. And, you know, when you have kids, and we have one, and we're so proud of him, but it does change your whole perspective on what life really is about.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because people assume that as our kids grow up, there's constant change. And you know, because we know that from our own existence, people don't necessarily go into business and think of it the same way. And yet, if you go into business in the same way and expect there to be constant change, then you don't rest on your laurels, and you are constantly challenging yourself. You're constantly learning. And, you know, like many of the guests that have come on the show, you've said exactly the same thing, which is, you know, effectively, school's never out for the professional. You've got to just keep learning, changing and adapting and working out where the next opportunities are.
You have to be a lifelong learner. I think one of the qualities of a successful entrepreneur is to be inquisitive and to love learning. Because if you can really adapt that sense of wanting to learn and grow, and whether it be, again, reading, audiobooks, podcasts, you know, always be learning new ideas and new concepts. You might not necessarily action everything you hear or learn because it might not be appropriate to the direction you want to take your business, but you'd be surprised at how that might lead to another thought, that might lead to another thought or another creative way of attacking a problem. So I think it's about learning and being comfortable with the idea of being a lifelong learner.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you, Cheryl. So all of that, you know, it's okay. It's, you know, it's relatively interesting, but it's nowhere near as important as understanding what's your favorite track from the 70s, 80s, and 90s. It might be a song that inspires you every time you hear it, gets you dancing around the room, or it might just be something that causes you to stop and reflect and just think, yeah, I'm just so glad to be alive. So come on in. What's your favorite track?
Okay, so anyone who knows me knows that I'm a big Prince fan. And anything Prince, I'm there. And I like the deep cuts, Simon. I like the more obscure type, you know, songs for sure. So anything by Prince is really what it's going to be. But listen, I mean, Purple Rain changed my life. Okay, they could change a lot of people's lives. So I would choose a track from Purple Rain. When Doves Cry is one that I've actually just been listening to recently, and actually reading an article about Prince and how he took the bass track out of When Doves Cry, and that was a crazy thing to do at that time. And a lot of his record executives were like, you can't do that. You can't take the bass track out of the song. What are you doing? And he was like, this is it. This is going to be a hit. So I was just reading an article about that recently. And so I'll choose When Doves Cry. It's something that, you know, you can't not dance. You can't not move if you're hearing When Doves Cry. You have to.
Totally agree. The guy is a complete genius. And I think for many people of our generation, that was the breakthrough track, wasn't it? I mean, it was from the film, but it was the song When Doves Cry that really broke through and introduced us all to Prince. And it's like, right, what else is out there?
And can I tell you a quick story about that song?
Yeah, please do.
So at that time in my life, my parents were broken up. My mom had a new boyfriend. We were moving across from one end of Canada to the other. It's a long trip. It's like 7 days long. So we had just started out. We were in Winnipeg, Manitoba, and we were driving through, or we had taken a break, and we were in Assiniboine Park, and it has a beautiful outdoor amphitheater. And this is 1984. So, you know, kids are in their leg warmers and all that, and they've got the boom box on the shoulder, and they were playing When Doves Cry. I'd never heard it before, but I had known of who he was just from prior records and things like that. So I was like, what's that sound? I love that. You know, I love that beat. And come to learn that it was that song. It was When Doves Cry. And it was being blasted through and reverberating off this huge amphitheater outside, big boom box on the shoulders. It was so 1984. But at that moment, I was like, whoa, this is next level. And then that's when, you know, you learn about, went, you know, Purple Rain and saw the movie and went, oh, okay, yeah, I'm in. I'm a lifelong fan. I've actually danced on stage with Prince at one of his sold out concerts in Toronto. I've seen him seven times. I've asked him a question on a TV program. Yeah, I'm an ultra fan.
And did you stick with him throughout the career?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
I personally believe there was never a misstep in that career. I know he had his challenges with the whole industry and how things came together, but that comes from just having a mind like his, which is so what's the word?
Well, to keep talking, you'll have to stop me, by the way, Simon. But one of the things that I think about Prince too is that he was ahead of his time in terms of the digital landscape that we work in, that we live in now. If he were still alive today, it would be really interesting to see how he would be using the frameworks of digital and, you know, TikTok and other, I don't know if he would have, but he was definitely ahead of the game. Way back when, he was one of the first to have an interactive website where you could travel through in a kind of a metaverse type environment. And I was a member of that group, NPG Club, back then. It was in its infancy. We didn't have the frameworks that we do today. It was way before social media and all these different things, but it was the early outset of what he was envisioning as a metaverse. It's almost like he was 30 years ahead of his time.
Yeah. Well, I guess we probably better stop there and play the
record. Better stop.
Here's When Doves Cry by Prince. Fantastic selection there, Cheryl. Thank you so much.
You really do have to stop me because I could talk. My husband would concur. Yeah, don't let her go. Don't let her go. She will keep going.
I've been asking people their favorite record from that era. You know, all the time I've been doing the show, and you're the first person to select Prince. So it's like fantastic.
You're kidding.
Thank you very much.
Really?
No, I know. Unbelievable.
Well, I wanted to listen. I didn't know how it works and your side, you know, what, because I could have chosen a track that was like less known or obscure, but then I thought, I don't want to do that. I'm going to pick something that I know you'd be good with and would know.
Brilliant. So that one is going to be added to the Spotify playlist for the Chain Show as well. So look out for that one. Yay. Thank you, Cheryl.
Yay. That's awesome.
Right then. So that's it. Unless you've got anything else you want to specifically add, we'll call the show to a halt. But before we do, tell everybody how they can get in touch with you, Cheryl.
So if you want to get in touch with me, you can check out profitablepodcastmethod.com, or you can just reach out to me on any social platform at Cheryl Plouffe, SHERYLPLOUFFE, and send me a message and just say that you heard me on The Chain Show with Simon Phillips, and I'd be happy to guide you into some resources that will help you move forward.
Brilliant. Thanks, Cheryl.
Thank you so much, Simon.
No, it's been an absolute pleasure. I hope everybody got so much value out of that show. I'm sure you did. This has been Simon Phillips with Cheryl Plouffe here on The Chain Show. Hope you've enjoyed yourself, and I'll see you back here again next week. Take care.